how do you reflect on, you know, very current events in light of this story, which, as you describe, is present for you?
Well, I reflect on it in the following way, that here is a story that imagines the world doesn't have to be this way. I think many of our conflicts are a failure of imagination. It's interesting that at the end of the Seder, we say next year in Jerusalem. But in many modern Haggadahs, we also say next year in Jerusalem, in a city at peace for all its inhabitants. So the end of the Seder expresses a great deal of hope. It's not satisfied with the present situation. And in fact, there's at the end of the Seder, there's another wonderful ritual, and I think that will respond to your question of how we look at the world today and what we do about it. There is a tradition that there is a cup or a goblet of wine that is filled and set aside for Elijah, who is the prophet who is to announce the coming of redemption and the Messiah. And at the end of the Seder, we open the door for Elijah, and we welcome him into our homes, and we hope he drinks from the cup. And as a child, I used to stare at that cup, hoping that, of course, it would diminish. And I was very distressed when I discovered it was poured down the kitchen sink afterwards. It meant that, well, redemption was not coming that year. Mm. But we have a new custom that we do at our Seders, and many people do at theirs. It's based on...
In your family?
Then? In my family, and actually in my congregation, and it's based on a Hasidic custom of not having a full cup for Elijah, but having an empty cup. And each person at the Seder adds something of his or her wine into that cup, because we recognize that it's the effort of each and every one of us that is going to bring about a world redeemed. So it's not just a prayer, and it's not just a hope that somehow there's going to be an intervention and the world will be saved, but it's each and every one of our efforts that is going to make a difference. And just as we've named each plague and we diminish the wine in our cup when we recite the plagues, so at the end of the Seder, we add wine to a cup and we name those acts that are going to bring about a world that is less violent and more free for all people.
You know, the whole notion of miracle is difficult for modern people, and there's lots of miracle in the Exodus story that is recounted and commemorated and sort of relived during Passover. Now, as you're talking about what it means to you, it has a very practical relevance. But how do you think about and describe the line between myth and truth, and miracle and reality?
Well, I think sometimes we get lost in the literalness of the text, and we're looking for the little truths of, is this, did it really happen this way? Did the sea really split? Were there really these plagues? And we look for scientific explanations of how a sea could split, and was there a wind? And we lose the profound truth that underlies the story. We don't have to take the text literally in order to take it seriously. I take the text seriously. It has a very profound truth to teach us. The miracle of the Exodus is not in the contradiction of physical nature, but really in the refashioning of human nature. I mean, once I conducted a woman's Seder with an Afro-American Episcopal priest, and we did a Black Jewish women's Seder. And that was very powerful, because what we were doing is taking these two stories of slavery and oppression and liberation and melding them together. And we each learned something about the other that we would not have known before. So we had stories of Black slavery, and we had stories of the Exodus side by side, and we had Passover songs, and we had Negro spirituals. And it was a very powerful experience for us.
Well, I couldn't hear nobody pray. I couldn't hear nobody pray. I was way down yonder by myself, and I couldn't hear nobody pray.
Something astonishing about about this tradition, as you describe it, is its malleability, that you are not threatened, that Judaism is not threatened by reading imaginatively into the story and applying it in new ways and seeing it in new ways and even changing the words and changing the stories in some sense.
It's set up that way. It's set up that here are the basic questions, but you can ask more. This is just to get you started. And here's the basic story, but we want you to keep talking way past midnight. We want you to talk about the whole issues of freedom and redemption. So it is an open kind of ritual in that respect. As long as we follow the structure that has been given us, the expectation of a certain order of the ritual that we would include.
And I mean, are there people who are threatened by that? Does that feel dangerous? Does it feel dangerous to you ever as a rabbi, in some sense, a keeper of this tradition, that people could take it too far?
Well, you know, I think that the tradition remains alive and vital because we keep reading ourselves into the story. And when we read ourselves into the story, we are adding another layer to bequeath to another generation. And it's not like you just throw everything out.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a deep respect for the tradition, and you take that tradition very seriously because, after all, it is the product of our ancestors' search for God. So you revere that tradition. But at the same time, you too are on a search for God, and you too are created in God's image. So should you not breathe your own breath and your own soul into that tradition to keep it alive and vital?
The Lord is my shepherd, I have all I need. She makes me lie down in green